Thanks for checking out the Courtroom Chronicles podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to provide news and information on criminal cases and the criminal justice process, and all discussions on this podcast are for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. All cases and situations are different based on facts, evidence, and circumstances of the parties involved. Listeners to this podcast should not act on the information contained in any of the materials without first consulting legal counsel.
Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 4 of Courtroom Chronicles with the County Attorney. We have the man himself here, County Attorney Kent Volkmer, and we appreciate everyone either watching online or listening in your car today. And Kent, we're talking about a topic that it is mind-blowing how big of a story this has become, not to diminish any of it, but just the concept of teen violence. I mean, it has been in the news for months now. And just to make clear, we're not going to comment on the specifics of other agencies' cases. We're not going to talk in detail about our pending cases for obvious reasons. So we're really looking at a 30,000-foot view of the issue. But it certainly seems at least anecdotal to me. We've seen a lot of teen violence lately.
So what I can tell you is we really sense sort of the COVID pandemic, we have seen a change in juvenile behavior. We've seen a change in isolation. We've seen a change in suicidal ideations. And most important to this conversation, we have seen a significant rise in teen violence.
And we, you know, just us, we have a shooting at a house party in Casa Grande that involved a teenager. We had a teenage football player in Santan Valley that was shot to death. Across the valley, you have the dubbed Gilbert Goons, which, you know, without going into detail on individual cases, just the concept of teenagers going around and, you know, being involved in assaults. What have you kind of made of, again, I don't know if we're seeing a statistical rise, but certainly an anecdotal rise in the severity of some of these cases?
We're certainly seeing a statistical rise as well. Just earlier today, I had the opportunity to present in front of most of our judges, and that was our chiefs of police. And that's the conversation that I was having with them. Went down and kind of broke down the numbers. 28% of murders in Pinal County for 2023 were committed by those 21 and under. 52% of all armed robberies were committed by those 21 and under. About 15% of all felony assaults committed by those 21 and under. 10% of all weapons offenses by those 21 and under. Generally speaking, that group makes up between 6 to 8% of all crimes. But when you start talking about violent crimes, they're punching significantly above their weight.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, for people who aren't familiar with the prior numbers, how big of an increase, you know, in layman's terms, are we seeing? A big deal.
Yes, multiples. You know, before, you're talking on gun offenses, if you go back 5 years ago, zero were those 21 and younger. The homicides, there would be one or perhaps two homicides. Now we're at 7 or 8 where they're involved. So, I mean, you're talking like 4 times the number of offenses that we were seeing just 5 years ago.
So what's the deal? What's behind this?
So, you know, I'm not an expert by any stretch. You know, I didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn last night. But I think we can attribute it to a lot of different things. I think what we have seen is a sort of a loss in the valuation of human lives. And I'm not here to criticize anybody. I'm not here to blame it. But during the entirety of the COVID pandemic, every single day it was blared on the top left-hand corner how many people have died this year, how many people have died this month, how many people have died this week, this day. And just day after day after day, those numbers were just thrown in our face. And the loss of human life, I think it was devalued, the harm in that's a person. You couple that with, and I'm not an anti-video game person, but you couple that with the reality of some of these video games. I love to say 15-year-old kids make dumb decisions. I mean, I'd ask every listener to think back when they were 15, particularly if you're a boy. I mean, as a 15-year-old boy, you make really dumb decisions. And you put 2 or 3 15-year-old boys together, you make 5 times as many dumb decisions. And then you start injecting alcohol, and you inject hormones, and you inject maybe substance abuse and all these other issues. And now you're starting to devalue life, and now we're putting guns in these kids' hands. And I think what we're seeing was sort of inevitable. This is a buildup that we're really entering crisis stage.
And some of the things we've seen around the valley in recent months have involved, you know, not weapons, but people, or, you know, people using, you know, fists or not firearms. But we have seen a number of teenagers with guns. Are you seeing more teens? Apparently, I don't know where they're getting them, but more teens with guns.
Yes. I think probably, obviously, the loss of every life is tragic. Every time somebody's assaulted and somebody harms, that's a degradation to our humanity. But the thing that probably concerns me the single most is this proliferation of guns. It blows my mind. At these high school parties, it's expected now that everybody's carrying, or somebody in your group will have a gun on them. In fact, if you go to a party and nobody has a gun, you're potentially going to be a victim because you can't protect yourself. That is a terrifying prospect, especially as a parent of a teenager myself.
I know how difficult it is raising kids, and I know you're not out to judge anybody, but what is the message to parents? I mean, how do we reel this in?
Quite frankly, kids aren't allowed to have guns. In the state of Arizona, they're prohibited possessors. If they're going to a shooting range, if they are going to a shooting event, or if they're in their home with their parents' permission, you're allowed to have a gun. Otherwise, kids can't have guns. If you give your 17-year-old a 9mm to keep them safe and you send them out of the house, they have committed a separate felony that could be charged.
But teen violence as a whole, just this concept of kids fighting, assaulting, whatever you want to call it, I know it kind of runs the gamut. I mean, what is the solution to getting kids to maybe hash this all out in a more productive manner?
So the first thing I think is really important to distinguish is we can't treat everybody with one broad brush. You know, I had the opportunity to be at a presentation where a superintendent of one of our local schools, was listening to some of the conversations and said, hey, I just want to remind everybody, most of these kids are good kids. Like, let's not get carried away. Let's not paint everybody as this evil villain. And I think that was a fair point. You know, I have a good relationship with almost all of our local superintendents. I've sat on boards with them. I've chatted with them. And he was right in this case. Most of our kids are good. What we really need to do, I think, better is distinguish those that are dangerous from those that are doing dumb things. The example I love to give is as we get older, we tend to get a little more conservative and sometimes a little more judgmental, and we remember how great things were back in our day. It was like, oh, in our day, this never happened. But I'd ask everybody listening to just think about back in your day, depending on where you're at. You know, West Side Story was about two gangs that are fighting. I grew up in the 80s. I remember The Outsiders with Ralph Macchio and Tom Cruise and everything. Like, juveniles getting in fights doing stupid things have been around forever. So I think if we start painting everybody as being evil and assuming it's an emergency and we need to lock kids down and lock them up, it's not going to work. But what we really need to do, I think, is restore the value of human life.
You're naming movies that are so old, half our audience isn't even familiar with those. No, but on a serious note, though, this is becoming a much bigger issue, and I've kind of joked about, not joked, but I mean, the amount of media coverage it's received has been kind of crazy to watch. But parents are obviously fed up with it, communities are fed up with it, and I'm sure law enforcement is fed up with it as well, because this is a problem that certainly wasn't, at least to this scale, even a couple of years ago.
In the right to be fed up with it. I am in no way condoning or trying to justify these behaviors or saying that it's okay to go up and punch somebody.
No, of course not. Right.
Absolutely, that's not appropriate. But what I'm saying is our consequences should be aligned with the seriousness of the offense. Obviously, if you beat somebody to death, then your consequences need to be incredibly serious. But if you're an idiot that goes and gets in a stupid little fight at a party, branding you as a felon for the rest of your life, making you go to prison, that doesn't serve the community safety. That doesn't help that person. That doesn't serve anything other than causing even additional issues. So all I'm saying is we need to make sure that there's some proportionality when we're looking at what the appropriate response is.
So when you look at cases like this, and we get the questions and the confusion all the time on juvenile cases. Well, are they going to be charged with an adult? What offense can be charged as an adult? Who gets charged as an adult? I know we could do a whole other episode on this, but briefly, I mean, I guess maybe clear some of that up. I mean, who can you and can't you charge as an adult? And I know it's complex, but in its simplest terms.
Right. So I'm going to try and make this as sort of generic as possible. Essentially, if you're under 14 years of age, I can't really charge you as an adult. So if you're 11, 12, 13, even if you kill somebody, I can't charge you as an adult. If you're 15, 16, and 17, there are certain offenses that are an automatic transfer. And if you're in that 14, 15, sometimes we're given some discretion and we try and look at real danger this person presents to our community. What is their history? But it's murky. There are certain offenses. If you're 15, 16, or 17, it automatically you get treated as an adult. As a 15, 16,
so, 17. So if you're 17 and you go out and kill somebody, that automatically becomes an adult case. There's really no discretion.
I have no discretion. The court has no discretion. You're charged as an adult.
But if you're 14, 15, depending on the type of offense, it's more of a gray area.
Right. And what we really look at is the maturity level and how much involvement does this kid have in the criminal justice system and what are the facts around the particular case. Those are all things that are kind of taken into consideration because, as I mentioned earlier, we want the consequences to be proportionate to the behavior.
Yeah. And how that's interesting because how do you weigh that? Because I've heard people are really passionate on this issue. I mean, you'll get, and again, I'm not talking about a specific case just in general here, but you'll get a case involving a 16 or 17 year old and you have some people going, oh, that was so horrific. Like lock up, they should be treated as an adult. They definitely should be treated as an adult. Then on the flip side, you definitely have people who strongly go, their brains aren't developed. Yes, what they did was terrible, but you're talking about a kid. And how do you weigh those factors when looking at cases like that?
I'm going to give you the worst answer I can. It depends. We as attorneys, we look at the totality of the circumstances. We really try to weigh their maturity. We try and weigh the home environment, the culture that they're. We look at all of those things to really try and make sure that we're treating them appropriately under these circumstances. I think you get in trouble when you create, rubrics and say, okay, if it's this is how it has to result. This isn't an algorithm, this isn't a mathematical formula. These are human lives that we're talking about. These are human people. These are human victims. And quite frankly, oftentimes we try and bring the victims into it because you'd be shocked. Some victims want, this person to be locked away forever. Sometimes we've got victims saying, I understand. And, I want these kids to have some measure of mercy. I want them to have some ability to have a life. So we take all of those factors in and we try and collectively make the decision that's best interest of the victim, the defendant, and the community as a whole.
And not to open up a whole nother can of worms on this topic, but for those juveniles who, do stay in the juvenile system, seemingly nobody has any idea what happens to juveniles in the juvenile system. I mean, what are the types of like severe punishment, quote unquote, that juveniles even that are even open to?
So there's incredible discretion that's given to the judge in the juvenile justice system. The person could be sentenced to the Juvenile Department of Corrections. The Arizona Department of Juvenile Corrections is what it's technically called, and it's up in kind of North Phoenix. And they could be sentenced there really until their 18th birthday, but even then, it's not necessarily till their 18th birthday. What happens is they're constantly being evaluated, and when they're determined to no longer present a danger to themselves or to the public at large, then they have to be released back into our community. If the court thinks detaining them is too much, the court can put them on, we call it JIPS, which is Juvenile Intensive Probation Services, where they're on house arrest and potentially an ankle monitor. Or it can be regular probation, or it can be diversion, or there's informal adjustments, and there's court consequences where it's a stern talking to, don't do it again. So the court is given sort of this giant swath of options, and the court takes all of the information into consideration, and then they try and make sure that the consequences, again, are proportionate or reflective of the offense committed.
But ultimately, if you're in the juvenile system, it's really, at most, it's till you're 18.
There's always exceptions,
generally.
A couple years ago, we were able to extend juvenile jurisdiction up to 19 because we've all seen those kids, and I'm sure there's parents listening or brothers and sisters or aunts and uncles listening that has a 17-and-a-half-year-old that sometimes you want to smack upside the head because they make the decisions of a 12-year-old child. Those really kids that are super, super immature or we don't think need to have those adult consequences, we can extend the juvenile system till they're 19.
So, but case in point, a 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old not going to be in prison for or whatever you want to call it. Till they're 70 on an offense.
Not in Arizona.
So again, we go back to this gray area of teen violence. I mean, what advice do you have to? I'm sure teenagers are listening to this podcast, surely. But I mean, what advice do you have? For teens, young adults, who might be listening and maybe don't have another way to solve some of these problems at this point.
What I can tell those listeners that may be in that sort of age range, I guess, there are people that care about you. Your life is not meaningless. Your life has value. There are teachers, there are professionals, there are counselors, there are school resource officers. There are people in your community that care about you. There are adults that care about you. Talk with them. You're going to be held accountable if you use violence to solve your problems. There are other alternatives out there. What we want is, look, I understand people are going to fight, and I'm not foolish enough to think that people are not going to solve some of their differences using their fists. But using your fist is a whole lot different than using a knife or using a gun or using a baseball bat. When you start bringing those weapons that can kill people, that can permanently maim people, that's when we start having to look at detaining you and locking you up because you present too large of a danger to our community at large. So again, I'm not suggesting you go out and fight, but if you're going to settle your differences, what I'd call the old-fashioned way, don't use weapons and try and talk through it. I know it sounds corny, but kindness is the way to go. I mean, but for the grace of God, there go I. We've all done dumb things. We've all made bad decisions. We've all offended people. We've all said the wrong thing at the wrong time. We've made people mad. If I got punched in the face for every time I made somebody mad, I mean, I'd be in trouble. Let's be honest. I'd be really in trouble, and my wife would probably be in prison. So, but in all seriousness, just try and have a little bit of grace with people. Realize that we're all humans. We all make mistakes, but everybody has inherent value.
I know you said you just talked with a lot of the police chiefs, law enforcement chiefs about this issue, and we have other big issues right around, you know, around the county and around the state, drugs and whatnot. But going forward, the issue of teen violence and guns in the hands of teenagers, how big of an issue is this for you going forward?
So I would actually say that this is probably one of my single greatest issues is not just teen violence, but guns in the hands of teenagers. I mentioned it earlier, man, teens make dumb decisions. Putting a gun in their hands only amplifies the results of those bad decisions. So it's one of the things that we're working as. I'm really proud to announce that we've partnered with ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in the federal government and the U.S. Attorney's Office, and we're actually having a NIBIN terminal that's being brought into our county. So when we go on scene and we confiscate guns, we can actually see if these guns have been used in other crimes. When we find casings that have been dispensed from a gun, we can run them through the NIBIN. So this is something collectively that everybody has said, enough is enough. We need to start making sure our community's safe.
Absolutely. Hopefully down the line, we're doing an episode about talking, in reference to a reduction in youth violence. We'll have to see how this continues to play out.
Hopefully this traveling roadshow goes nationwide, and we're going to other jurisdictions to talk about how they can reduce their issues that they're having by loving their neighbors.
Traveling Roadshow, maybe that should be the name of the podcast. Now, I want to thank everyone who watched online or who's listening in their car, but we'll see you here in a couple of weeks next time on Courtroom Chronicles with the County Attorney. Thanks, everybody.